Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everybody. It is not just the end of Mayor Bloomberg's 12 years coming on New Year's Day, but the end of the Marty Markowitz era in Brooklyn after 12 years as borough president and Kings County's biggest cheerleader. Marty Markowitz has braved the snow to join us now to talk about his tenure during a time of incredible change since 2001 that has left Brooklyn a real estate and cultural capital of the world that few might have predicted a generation ago, as well as home to so much of New York's human diversity and also some of its horrifying inequality, as we heard in the previous segment. President Markowitz, welcome back to WNYC one last time in your present job.
Well, thank you. And by the way, I made it to the big time finally. As the exit door is a few weeks away, I'm live with you on the Brian Lehrer Show. Hey, does it get any better than this?
There you go. And it's been phone interviews over the years as
That's true.
Worked out.
That's true.
So thanks for coming across. And if you had to tell a visitor from Mars, or maybe say Nebraska, about how Brooklyn has changed in the last 12 years, where might you begin?
Well, you could begin in Fort Greene. We could begin in Bedford-Stuyvesant. We could begin in Windsor Terrace. We could begin in neighborhoods, Carroll Gardens and Borum Hill. We can begin in Prospect Heights and Crown Heights and neighborhoods in every just about every part of Brooklyn that we become a mecca for the creative young professionals across America, refugees from Manhattan, and growing ethnic groups, everything from French to Australians. And we have a fast-growing Australian population, and we're obviously the fastest-growing Chinese community now in the metropolitan New York area. So all of that, and then, of course, we remain the lesbian capital of New York City in the Northeast. And that
you
say community,
lesbian as opposed to gay and lesbian.
Yeah,
lesbian
in other words,
particular?
We have a much larger lesbian population in Brooklyn. New York City is fortunate to have a large LGBT community, but in Brooklyn, in particular, the lesbian community. There's no question; it's the capital of the Northeast, and they've made unbelievable contributions to the quality of life in our city and our borough.
I see that the mayor's office tweeted last week that Brooklyn has, quote, Brooklyn has become the quintessential urban success story over the last 12 years, and that Marty Markowitz deserves special credit. Would you also say, first of all, quintessential urban success story?
Well, I would say that there's no question that in a significant portion of Brooklyn, it is a success story. But I'm very mindful, as someone, as borough president, I've been to every corner of our borough. I also know that the great success, this train that's fast moving, is not carrying everyone in the borough. And sadly, there are neighborhoods that are still faced with the major challenges of urban life, lower economic in particular, and jobless. Unemployment rates are still very high, particularly among black males. And my efforts, I must tell you, Brian, to try to get a manufacturing concern, I tried my best with Samsung in particular, and also Apple. I've written to Apple, even sent a video to Apple on an iPad when it came out. But
is there still
no
Apple
response?
Still no Apple store in
still,
Brooklyn?
Still, I mean, I am. By the way, if Mr. Cook would say to me, Mr. Markowitz, you can either have a retail store or a manufacturing facility, I'd opt for the manufacturing facility in East New York, or in Brownsville or Cypress Hills. And I am baffled why they are not yet in Brooklyn. But I hear rumors every other week they're coming down to a property and they're looking. But I'm convinced. Listen, I don't define Brooklyn as to whether or not we get an Apple store. I'd rather have an Apple manufacturing facility. That's what I'd like.
And listeners, your calls and posts and tweets are welcome for outgoing Brooklyn Borough President Marty Markowitz on Twitter. We're collecting your 140 characters on how Brooklyn has changed in the last 12 years. I will read you a few of these in
sure,
a minute.
Sure.
President Markowitz, on the phone, same question. How has Brooklyn changed? Plus, any questions or stories for Marty Markowitz? Where in the borough did you encounter the borough president over the last 12 years? Was it one of his lightsaber-wielding graduation speeches? Or where else? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And I do want to go back to the mayor's tweet where they said that you deserve special credit. What credit, in all modesty, can you claim? It's rare that an interviewer asks a politician to take credit for something. But at the end of 12 years, I'm giving you that platform because Brooklyn is shaped by so many huge forces, from globalization to regional real estate trends. And so with as much pride as you want, how do you think you were able to contribute to that in an office that doesn't have that much actual on-paper political power?
Well, we have to add the incredible leaders of civic and community and faith organizations, educational groups, community boards, artistic groups, dance groups. I mean, the whole mix of unbelievable, devoted and talented residents of Brooklyn that truly are passionate about the borough, truly passionate. I'm often described as a cheerleader, and some say that to demean my role. But the truth of the matter is that any elected official, particularly a mayor or a borough president, I see one of the major parts of the job is being a cheerleader, lifting spirits, making folks feel better about who they are, where they reside. And I have taken that role very, very seriously. There is no question that in terms of my contributions, I promised when I ran for borough president that even though the borough president job certainly is not the most important governmentally in the city of New York, for sure, unfortunately. And by the way, a better city government would happen if they restored some of the governance roles to the city, to the borough presidents, with a fixed budget, and greater land use role. I think we'd have a better functioning city of New York. That's my opinion. But what I did was I used the borough presidency to put Brooklyn on the map. We started out very aggressively with tourism and pitching magazines around the country, around the world, about the miracle of Brooklyn. I went after a national team. You know, I took 8 years of I don't know what to say, except that email is a great invention, but it also allows people to hide and to say the worst possible things that you can hear from another human being. But I fought that battle because I knew that having a national sports team in Brooklyn and an arena would turn the page in a positive way for Brooklyn's present and future. So I have a direct role in that and some of the other areas of Brooklyn. It's our book festival, which is the largest now in the Northeast and the third largest in America after Miami and after Los Angeles. We were able to continue the great concert series. I was able to help build thousands and thousands of units of affordable housing, helping senior citizens. I did everything without really a government role in terms of real power for the borough presidency, and you'd be surprised how meager the budgets are for borough presidents. It's incredible. But through it all, I was able to I knew what a gem Brooklyn was, and all I needed to do was polish it, and that's what I did.
Brooklyn Borough President Marty Markowitz, term limited out now after 12 years, so he's going to go on to something else at the age of 68. We'll get to one thing that's being suggested that might be still in city government as we go on. But we posed a challenge on Twitter this morning, described the changes in Brooklyn over the last 12 years in 140 characters. You ready for some of these?
Sure.
Amy writes, on one hand, nothing will ever be the same. On the other, same as it ever was. Kim tweets, massive gentrification pricing former residents out. Daniel says, I wore a tuxedo to an Arcade Fire concert in Bushwick. Yzette writes, 12 years ago, I bribed friends to visit me in the slow Prospect Heights. Now we Manhattanites go to Brooklyn for a social life.
I love
and
that.
David just asks, is this pot brownie gluten-free?
Oh, boy. We are the capital of artisanal, organic, gluten-free, hydroponic-grown, cruelty-free, there's no question. But one look at me, Brian, and you know that revolution hasn't hit me yet, that's for sure. I'm old school through and through.
Warren in South Midwood, you're on WNYC with Marty Markowitz. Hello.
Yeah, hi. I just want to say that you have to say that Marty has unending enthusiasm and energy. He showed up everywhere. He really brought people out. He gave people a real sense of community, and he brought people together by tons of events. And one thing he could always depend on was the fact that Marty would show up, and that was encouraging, and that brought people out. He gave us all types of things to do, and to celebrate Brooklyn was a pretty big thing, pretty important, because it gave people a sense of pride of borough, of where they live, and activism unending. So congratulations, Marty.
Thank you very much. Thank you very, very much. And I set out initially, I knew exactly, you know, I had a lot of years to think about being borough president. In fact, by the age of 16, I knew that's what I wanted to be professionally when I visited Borough Hall from high school.
16.
I knew I wanted to be borough president. And every job I ran for, both the city council, which I failed to win, and state senator, and I ran for borough president when I was 40 and lost against then borough president Howard Golden. But I had a lot of time to prepare, and I knew exactly what Brooklyn needed.
Where did you grow up?
Grew up in Crown Heights. And I must add that I know we're talking about this horrible investigation that the New York Times has brought to our attention. And I grew up in poverty, too, I must tell you. And we lived on Social Security survivor benefits and also in public housing, Sheepshead Nostrand House of my mom and my two younger sisters after my dad died when I was 9. But the poverty of today that these families face is nothing like the poverty that we faced. We faced poverty in our pocketbooks. They face poverty throughout the persona. I mean, even though we had no money, we had respect in ourselves. We held, even though we were ashamed of being poor, we knew that there was a better day and hope. And so many of these people have no hope. And we still have not turned the corner on giving these folks that there's a better life. There's a better life if you believe in yourself. And there's where city policy hasn't faced the truth. Once you have self-respect, you will be successful. It all hinges on that, in my opinion.
Do you want to comment on some of the policies that are referenced in today's edition, including the homeless advantage policy, where there was rental assistance, temporary rental assistance given to some families like Dasani's family and then withdrawn?
Listen, I have to tell you, there's a lot of pressures on a budget that every mayor is going to face, including this mayor, and a city council that is also part of the budget-making process as well. And they had to make a decision how to wisely spend the money to the best way. And obviously, folks that are caught up in this lifetime of poverty have little voice in this debate. There's no question about it. They have among the lowest voter registration and voter turnout. They just don't know how to navigate in terms of bringing their positions in front of those that can make a decision. Having said that, the focus has to be jobs, 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 jobs. And I'm talking about a failure that we have not confronted. We can't live on information technology jobs only. We can't live on the science in 30 years from now. People need jobs now, and we need manufacturing back, and we've got to do city policy and motivate and adjust city policy to encourage manufacturing again in our city and put these folks back to work. Let me tell you something, Brian. The more people that get jobs in East New York and Brownsville, that's less folks that we have to worry about, because the future of this city is being written right there. And if they don't make it, it's going to be hard for all of us to make it.
Mayor Bloomberg has, I guess maybe they call it micro manufacturing seed projects at the Brooklyn Navy Yard,
yes,
for example.
Absolutely. Great success story.
Competing with, you know, Bangladesh and Colombia and take your pick, we could ever bring large-scale manufacturing back to New York City?
Absolutely. We must bring large-scale.
How?
We have to. What we have to do is use land grants, employment credits, energy assistance. I'll tell you what we got over Bangladesh. We're in the New York metropolitan area. We can move goods quicker. They can change designs and programs quicker and get it out to the market quicker. And the transportation cost will be less. And you've got an eager workforce. You've got tens of thousands of men and women that are unemployed, and particularly African-American men that are desperate for work. And you can train them, give them a good, solid job, because that is self-respect and gets them on their way in their life.
This is WNYC FM HD and AM New York and New Jersey Public Radio, WNJT FM 88.1 Trenton, WNJP 88.5 Sussex, WNJY 89.3 Netcong, and WNJO 90.3 Toms River. And Brooklyn Borough President Marty Markowitz with us, and Jeff in Park Slope with us. Jeff, you're on the air. Hello.
Good morning, guys. When you said earlier, do you have any interesting stories about meeting Marty? I was volunteering for the de Blasio campaign, and on the Saturday before Election Day, they gathered up all the volunteers in the office for Bill to give a thank you speech, and Marty was there. And he said a few words, and I walked up to him later on and introduced myself and said, Marty, thank you so much for the service to our borough. He's done so much to promote our name throughout the city and make it a real cultural center. I mean, the artists bring the people here, but Marty got the word out there. And then, strangely enough, that evening I'm out going back to another office, so I'm making volunteer calls. And I said to this particular lady, I hope we can count on your support for Bill this year. And she said, oh, yeah, my husband and I are huge supporters. As a matter of fact, he's out there campaigning in Worth right now. And I looked at the list. And then somehow or another, I managed to get Mrs. Markowitz on the phone. So I got to say thank you to both Markowitzes for their service to the city and how much we appreciate it, and we're going to miss them.
Well, thank you. I don't plan to leave anywhere. I will be living in Brooklyn forever. And when I say forever, Brian, I can guarantee it. My final landlord is Greenwood Cemetery, not less than 99 years from now. Okay, I want to be sure you understand that. I'm in no rush.
Greenwood, now we know the final resting place.
I don't want to leave Brooklyn ever.
When he's 167 for Marty Markowitz. You know that Letitia James, the incoming public advocate, was here. And she said she's petitioning the mayor-elect to appoint you commissioner of the mayor's office for international affairs and to rename the position ambassador for New York City to fit you. Would you like that job and title?
Well, first off, I want to thank Tish very, very much, and David Greenfield as well. There's only one ambassador of New York City, and the other title is mayor. And Bill de Blasio will do that superbly. But yes, I would be interested in that type of position. It is the liaison between the city and City Hall and the office of the mayor and the diplomatic corps here in New York City and the United Nations. And I really believe the position could be fashioned in a way to take advantage of the fact that New York City is an international city, but we're not taking advantage of leveraging that to see what kind of companies and services that we can bring into the city directly to help.
So that
our schools.
Sorry.
So there's no question I would certainly be interested in that among other possibilities. And listen, this is the mayor's decision to make, and whatever he decides is good for me.
And so that relates right back to the speech you were giving before about the possibility of bringing real manufacturing back to New York.
Right, absolutely. And I really believe that companies in China and in Korea in particular, as well as American companies, that we can present them with solid arguments and assistance. By the way, it's not going to be unlike what the mayor did successfully in getting institutions of higher education from America, from Israel, to make their home of Institute of Applied Sciences, NYU, for instance, in Brooklyn and in Manhattan. And I'm very excited that we can apply that model to manufacturing.
And you know you would have to be the ambassador for all of the boroughs equally in that job.
No question.
Could you handle that?
Oh, absolutely. Listen, I mean, first off, there's no question that Staten Island, let's face it, no one understands Staten Island better than Brooklyn, since so many of my brothers and sisters that relocated went from Brooklyn to Staten Island. Queens is certainly a borough, a sister borough. And the Bronx, oh, absolutely, no question about it. Ruben Diaz, quite active, and Manhattan. So, of course, it's the city of New York. I always talked about Brooklyn, and I'm proud of the city of Brooklyn. But I always say that I live in a big city, and we're part of another city, a larger city called the city of New York.
Michael, who met you in Red Hook. You're on WNYC. Hello, Michael.
Hi, this is Michael Albert. I'm the owner of the Surreal Juice Company. Okay. And I'm also a pop artist, and I sell my wares to Fairway. And I just wanted to mention that Mr. Markowitz was very importantly involved in the bringing Fairway to Brooklyn, which I think is a great institution that enhanced the whole Brooklyn and Red Hook experience. And the fact that it was destroyed during Sandy and then rebuilt was an incredible project that I know that he made happen. And I just wanted to say thank you for that. And I felt your energy at the reopening. And I know that you're going to go on to bigger and better things. You're going to probably save the world.
I don't know about that, but I'm happy. Fairway is a great institution, and they've made such unbelievable contributions to our borough and IKEA. And the cruise ship terminal that I was very instrumental in getting into Brooklyn is also added extra to Brooklyn and certainly to Red Hook. And Whole Foods is coming to Brooklyn next week. It opens up. And I must tell you, there was a time when national retailers, when you said Brooklyn, they said, what? Now they say when. And all I could tell you is it's very exciting days for Brooklyn and for the whole city. New York is no question the city that everybody wants to live in.
Alan in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Good morning, Brian. Marty and I know each other for about 30 years, and I really respect what he's done with his office the last 12 years. Given the role of transit in helping Brooklyn flourish the last 12 years, and now that he's walking out the door of his office, I wonder what he thinks about possibilities for changing the financial burden for supporting existing and new transit in Brooklyn and elsewhere by something like a benefit zone assessment around train stations to reflect the value of transit to the buildings that are close to those stations. Right now, there's too much burden put on strap hangers instead of skyscrapers. Would he support that?
Well, I would certainly support a greater role of the federal and state government in funding public transportation to enable the greatest number of folks to use it. Let's face it, more and more of one's income is being spent getting to and from work, and it really shouldn't be that way. So I'd like to see, you know, something you're discussing. It's certainly worthy of serious review, but the question is always revenue, revenue, revenue. Where is that money coming from? And unfortunately, as you know and I know, in Washington, they're just not getting it. They're absolutely not getting it.
I think he's suggesting that it should come more from the developers who build around transit stations.
Well, you know, developers are called upon, for instance, the Esplanades to maintain and enhance the waterfront in Brooklyn, and particularly in Williamsburg. And, everything's a trade-off. Everything's a balance. If you're going to impose additional burdens on developers, there has to be something that they expect back that enables them to be able to make their necessary profits. And listen, it is a profit-making business. After all, that's where our taxes come from. And at the same time, be able to provide this public amenity. I certainly would be open to it, but everything has to be balanced.
And you do have your critics as much as you yearn
sure.
to bring a professional sports team back to Brooklyn.
You bet.
For your advocacy of the Atlantic Yards project. And now people say, look, no affordable housing that was supposed to be part of the deal. Are you disappointed in how it's working out?
Bunk. Let me spell it again. B-U-N-K, bunk.
Why?
The truth is that the recession hit, and how about 7-8 years of lawsuits that prevented anything from being done at that location? And I could tell you from get-go that Forest City Rat, from the beginning, absolutely made a commitment to be able to afford those 2,250 affordable apartments as for this project. And as you know, this project now is, there's been financial infusions coming in, and I have no doubt that the housing will be built on an expedited basis.
When?
And not, there's no question the first building will be next year. They're already moving very shortly. They're moving from their prefab modular, they're moving it to the site. And little by little, but that's the first building, and there will be an acceleration of additional buildings. Understand this, they want those buildings to go up, because that's where the profit is to get those buildings up.
In the market rate portion of those buildings.
The market rate and the affordable housing. I think what this project will do, it will ensure the income diversity of our communities, with a significant portion of those apartments being affordable for people of low, moderate, and lower middle income and middle income. I think it's fabulous. And from day one, I got to tell you something. Anyone, traffic is moving better now than it moved before that arena opened, in my opinion, by the way. And secondly, when I go occasionally, I go there and I see some of the folks that bitterly opposed it, and they're in there buying their tickets and they're enjoying themselves and their families. I just sit back and I know that I did the right thing. I know I did the right thing.
And I want to acknowledge the comments on our comments page that are tagging you as a prime critic of bike lanes.
Yes.
I think I remember you saying nobody uses them and they take up traffic lanes for cars. Have you warmed to the mayor's approach on that at all?
Listen, first off, I'm not against bicycles. My wife and I have a bicycle. But I have absolute right to raise a question as to whether or not bicycle lanes should be emphasized as a viable alternative transportation mode. And I have serious questions about that. I really do. If you're in your 20s and early 30s and you live in Williamsburg and you work in Dumbo, absolutely, I could make sense. I don't oppose that at all.
Do you have
but
any
if you live in
still?
Sheepshead Bay in Manhattan Beach and you work in Midtown Manhattan and you're in your 50s and 60s, come on. You know, the bottom line is, you know, this has to be approached rationally. And the one thing I learned in all my years in public service, when you're a zealot, you're a zealot. If you're not with them 100%, no matter what they want, you are an enemy to them. So I've gotten used to this already, and it's okay. So have I warmed to it? Not really. I mean, I recognize that certain bicycle lanes are wonderful. For instance, in Manhattan, on the west side, I love that bike. I love it. If you want to build a bicycle lane on the Verrazano Bridge, magnificent.
And
I think it's wonderful.
City bike, a good thing?
From what I can see so far, it doesn't seem, you know, except the placement of some of those bikes somewhere. But it looks like it's had a positive impact by and large. I don't see any opposition to it.
We're almost out of time. The incoming Brooklyn Borough President is Eric Adams, almost by acclamation. I mean, he basically had no opposition either in the primary or the general election.
He's so good, no one wanted to run against him. Isn't that something? I love it. How lucky are you, Eric?
Your biggest pieces of advice for President Adams.
All I could tell him is that it's what I tell every elected official that are newly elected, even if they're elected to a new position. And that is this. For those that you help, they may remember. But for those that you don't help, they never forget. Let that be your guide for your future public service. Listen, he's got good training. He's eager. I know that he wants a future even beyond borough presidency. And that's a good thing because it means that he will demonstrate during the years that he's borough president what he's got and be able to showcase that around the city of New York. So I feel we're in good hands. And I'll be there. If he calls on me, I won't get in his way, I promise you. But if he calls me, I'll be there to assist him in any way that he wishes.
The outgoing borough president of Brooklyn after 12 years, Marty Markowitz, perhaps soon to return as the ambassador from New York City. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me, and happy holidays to one and all.
And to you, too. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, Israel's deputy defense minister, Danny Danone, on the prospects for peace with Iran and the Palestinians, with John Kerry working so hard on both. And then the New York State Board of Regents Chancellor, Merrill Tisch, braving a series of town hall meetings on the Common Core curriculum here in New York City today. Stay with us.